morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Well, it's kind of a soggy start to the day, and unfortunately, apparently, it's going to continue that way for another day.
Well, as long as your argument isn't soggy.
Well, Judge, I can't promise that. It is a very straightforward case. If it pleases the court, I'm Barry McCracken. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Jennings. Let me save 5 minutes if I can. I'll make every effort to do that. And basically, it is a very minor issue, or at least a very narrow issue. I think it's certainly important to my client, but it's a very, very focused issue. The facts really aren't in dispute. It's a long-term romantic relationship that has come to an abrupt or not so abrupt end as a meeting a couple of days before, and then 3 o'clock in the morning, my client decides to go over and go form a joint residence of the couple. His statement at the time he was confronted by the leaseholder was that he was there to see his daughter for one last time. It was a fracas. She prevented him from going in the child's bedroom. He then left, but on his way out decided he would pick up her cell phone in the charger and take it with him, scuffle going out the door. And essentially that's it. I guess the only other significant fact to kick in here is that basically he didn't come through the front door, didn't come through the back door. He elected to come through the bathroom window, and apparently he had to move the air conditioner out of the way to do so.
It was 3 o'clock in the morning.
And it was 3 a.m. I thought I said that. But it was, different people have different social hours in Norfolk, I've found. But again, there's no question that it fell under the category of an unlawful entry. That's not disputed. What is disputed here is the first step in trying to analyze the case is with what intent did the Commonwealth have to establish to show that this constituted the allegation in the indictment. And, first it's, the defense position, of course, that it's not a general intent offense. The statute uses the word purpose, but clearly when it says he had to enter with the purpose of doing one of three things, that puts a specific intent element onto this misdemeanor. And it has to be, it either has to be to damage the property, to damage its contents, or to interfere with the leaseholder or owner's rights to the property. And I think one of the important things to note about that little statement is the property we're talking about that it has to interfere with is the realty. It is not the cell phone. It's not the contents thereof. It's essentially the quiet, to interfere with the quiet enjoyment of the residence or the property.
Mr. McCracken, though, how would entering at 3 a.m. through a bathroom window while she's asleep on a couch not be interfering with those rights?
Well, keep in mind, that's essentially the Commonwealth's position, and that's the real, the nub of this thing is, if you take the position simply by the time and nature of the entry, that it presupposes that will have some interference with her free enjoyment of the property, then it becomes a general intent offense, doesn't it?
Isn't it reasonable for this for Mr. Jennings to think that they would be sleeping and that to enter surreptitiously at 3 o'clock in the morning in the dark might interfere with with his girlfriend's tranquility and peace of mind?
Well, and I don't, again, when we say quiet enjoyment, generally that means cutting off the gas, shutting down the water supply, basically making the property uninhabitable without actually inflicting damage to it or its contents. And the problem I have is what we're doing is saying, look, anybody other than walking through the front door at what we normal folks would consider a reasonable hour, and I once again, 3 a.m. in the morning is not particularly unusual for a lot of areas in Norfolk for people to have social intercourse. The entry through the bathroom window by moving the air conditioner, however, I will acknowledge is a lot more suspect. The point that I'm making and what I'm saying is that as you properly interpret the statute, you have to show its purpose was to somehow to basically, it's an offense against realty. And you know, basically when you talk about taking a cell phone, if he had come in the apartment with the intent to take the cell phone, that wouldn't qualify as a violation of this offense. It'd be a burglary. But we know that this is not, I mean, from past precedent, we know this is not a lesser included offense of burglary. So, because it's directed at a different thing. It's really directed at protecting property rights, and property rights specifically of the realtor.
But isn't a very basic property right to enjoy your property without interference?
Well, when you say interference, he was standing there. He didn't preclude her from going to the bathroom. He didn't preclude her from going to the bedroom. And what I'm saying, Judge, is if you take that position, and that's really the position the Commonwealth has taken through the Attorney General, then you turn it into a general offense. All it means is if he's anywhere in that apartment uninvited, he, by definition, is interfering with the property right. And that clearly cannot be the meaning. Otherwise, it renders that whole purpose a nullity. You know, the legislature had the mean for that, to, you know, that particular provision to mean something other than just I'm going in the apartment because I want to and I'm not authorized. Otherwise, it renders that entire statement about purpose as having no meaning. And surely it would be a lot more disconcerting if he were standing in the bedroom hall at 3 a.m. in the morning having entered through the bathroom than it would have been had he come through the front, unlocked front door and was standing there at 2 in the afternoon. But, you know, just the fact that he was there uninvited by definition is going, using what the position that you posited and the position they posited, by definition, is going to interfere with property rights. So then we, you know, once again, if you interpret it and narrowed it down to that, it clearly would mean that the legislature put in a meaningless provision. And I don't think they did that, and I don't think that's proper statutory construction. I mean, I don't think I hit on this quite as much in my written brief. I could have done a reply to the Attorney General's, but I thought this would be as an appropriate way to address this particular issue as that. You know, our hope is, look, there's no question that she felt uncomfortable with him being there. There's no question that he acted in improper manner. There's no question that he unlawfully entered. But it requires the unlawful enter with one of those specific purposes in mind, and just saying, look, by being there at 3 a.m. in the morning, that's going to, you know, standing alone constitute an interference with her property rights. And that simply means that all that other language about purpose means nothing.
Mr. Kirkin, how is the fact that he was told specifically, though, not to have any contact with her or her family impact your argument?
Well, you know, basically that would make it...
Specifically about the interference of the property rights.
I'm sorry, I...
Specifically about interfering with the property rights.
When, you know, being told not to come on the property and then entering, you don't have to have a purpose. You just have to be defying that order, and that constitutes a different offense. It constitutes a trespass.
Right. I'm not talking about in terms of a trespass. I'm talking about it in terms of interfering with her property rights. I mean, clearly she's established what she wants in terms of how she wants her property to go. She doesn't want him present. She wants the quiet enjoyment. He's aware of this. I guess what I'm getting at is, does that come into play at all?
I don't think it does. Remember, there is, as I started out, there's no question about the impropriety of his entry. And I think that question really goes, your question and that particular statement about what he knew about her desires, certainly make, regardless of whether he'd come through the front door or whether he'd gone through the bathroom window with the air conditioning, makes it an unlawful entry. We don't dispute that. But, you know, the entry part, it's the intent part that we're arguing about, and what we're saying is standing alone, there's nothing in the record from which inference that his intent, his purpose, or his intent in entering met the criteria of that second element of the offense. Now, reasonable minds can certainly differ about this, but that is our position, essentially, that we're arguing about intent. And look, we know, as a practical matter, intent is generally left in the domain of the trier fact, not for you folks to decide in most circumstances. But I think the reason the intent issue is important is because I think it's, one, I don't think it's clear. I don't think people clearly understand, because if you follow all of the arguments that the AG has made and your questions, you're basically looking at the unlawfulness of the entry, not the purpose for which he entered. Like I said, if he went in with the intent to steal the telephone, that would not constitute this crime. It's an unlawful purpose. It's an unlawfully, I mean, the entry itself is unlawful, and if properly charged, could be conviction of a burglary. But that's not what we have here. What we have is a unlawful entry, which is the term, but that requires a purpose specifically directed at the quiet enjoyment of the residence. And his conduct here, although it may be criminal and may be inappropriate, is not this offense. And with that, I, the yellow light is on. If I use my time, I forget what everything means.
You have 4 minutes and 36.
Well, I kind of look at that as my Alzheimer's test. When the light starts flashing, when y'all are still going, I know I've really got trouble. I'll reserve that 5 minutes. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Mr. Katz.
Good morning. Hey, please, the court. I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. I would like to start by just responding briefly to the assertion that this was a joint residence of the couple, and I don't think the record would support that assertion. Specifically, I would rely on page 46 of the joint appendix, in which it was set out that Mr. Jennings never had a key to the residence. He relied on the Good family, Ms. Good and her family, to allow him entry. So I think it would be inappropriate to characterize it as a joint home. It was a place he was allowed to live at their sufferance. And Judge Malveaux, I think that gets to your question. Context matters here. And Mr. McCracken raises the specter of arguing that an affirmance on this ground would remove the intent element from the statute, that if the Commonwealth's argument were accepted on appeal, that somehow the intent element would be read out of the statute. And I submit that that's simply not the case. It is more than a gentleman there uninvited at 3 a.m., because the context matters. We have a meeting in which, as Judge, you indicated, he's told not to have any contact with the family. He goes to the residence that he's never had a key for, and he gains entry by the window at 3 a.m. When he goes there, it causes an affray. The children are scared. They're afraid to remain in the residence afterwards because they're afraid he may come back. It's a place that he was barred from. And I would submit that all of that is circumstantial evidence that the fact finder could take into account in determining what was this gentleman's intent when he made the entry. And as the court is well aware, a person intends the natural and probable consequences of their actions. And I would submit that a natural and probable consequence of going to the apartment that he didn't have a key for at 3 a.m. after having been told not to come back and taking the phone and scaring the mother and threatening the lives of her parents, all of that would suggest that it would interfere with the property owner's right. And I don't think it can be said that no fact finder could conclude, as the trial court did in this case, that the intent was a natural and probable consequence of gaining entry in that fashion. And briefly, I would like to respond to the argument raised on brief that there was an innocent intent asserted, that he simply wanted to see his daughter for the last time. And clearly, the fact finder was not required to credit that as a truthful statement. And the other evidence suggested that it was not a truthful statement and rightly rejected that hypothesis of innocence. So I would submit that an affirmance would not eliminate the intent element required under the statute. As I laid out on brief and here today, I think ample evidence supported that conclusion. And the hypothesis of innocence was rejected, and rightly so. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions the panel may have.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Katz.
Well, I'll try to be as meanly brief in my response. There's no question that, you know, the hypothesis of innocence, when the prior fact is confronted with these type facts, it's certainly true that the prior fact is going to look to find the individual guilty of something. The problem is what the evidence made out my client did was not what he was charged with. The thing about the residence, the youngest child, she had four children. The youngest daughter was his. They lived together, and she said that, you know, he moved out in April of 2014. This was an ongoing, this wasn't somebody that she'd met at the local bar 2 weeks ago. This was someone that had an ongoing relationship with the woman, and basically had resided in that house. The exact length of time was not clear, but it was more than a couple of days by the way she described it. And again, when we get to either the circumstances, one, the purpose had to exist at the time he entered. You can't enter This is like burglary. You can't enter and then form the intent later. The intent and the act have to correspond. At the point of the entry, he had to be going in there for one of the proscribed purposes under the statute. If that wasn't his intent upon entry, it doesn't matter what he did later. He didn't have to do any of it. I mean, if you can establish what his intent was, it would not be a defense. You know, the fact that we took the phone and they had a scuffle and everybody was upset and they were screaming and hollering. If none of that had happened, if you could establish that his purpose in going through the window was to accomplish one of those prescribed acts, then the crime is complete. It is kind of a similar offense to a burglary. It is inchoate, in large part, is an inchoate crime. In that regard, the language, and I do humbly take umbrage at the characterization. The way the Attorney General will have it is if anybody went in without permission and stood in a house, that would constitute proof of the specific intent to interfere with the property rights related to that real estate, and that simply is not the law. It would not make sense in the scheme of the statute itself. And I'd urge you to reverse his conviction on this one offense. Are there any questions?
No, thank you, Mr. McCracken.
Hopefully that wasn't too soggy, Judge.